And we are back live Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas, Nevada. Mix 11, my esteemed colleagues, these two gentlemen on Channel 9 Live, a man who needs an introduction, Miguel DeCaza.
Thank you.
Miguel, what are you working on these days?
I sorted technologies around .NET. So we believe strongly that we like .NET more than Microsoft does.
Oh, this is how we start.
This is how we start. But we happen to love it more in other platforms. So we love it on the Mac, we love it on the iPhone, we love it on Linux, we love it on Android. So we work on bringing the .NET loving to the unloved ones.
Yes. That's making people productive on other non-productive platforms.
It's not only about productive, it's about making people happy. And I think that Anders has stroken a good balance in happiness and
power and productivity.
Yes,
it's on the extremes. You can go.
I would talk about joy. I'm more a guy of
joy.
I like to talk about joy. Productivity, sounds like I'm talking to an MBA.
Okay, and a man who needs no introduction, Scott Hanselman.
How's it going,
Scott? What are you working on these days?
Supporting Miguel in his attempt.
In his attempt to love C-sharp more than everyone else?
I think .NET is good, right? .NET is love. If Don Box were here, I'm sure he would say that.
I'm sure he would.
No, I talked a little bit ago, 11:30. I did a talk that was actually called An Overview of the Microsoft Web Platform of Love.
Aww.
Wait.
Platform of Love.
You missed it.
Was this a talk where you discuss Entity Framework?
The gentle manatee that is Entity Framework.
Gracious
manatee.
Gracious manatee.
So I talked about IIS Express, and I talked about Razor, and I talked about NuGet, and I talked about EF Code First, and I talked about SQL Compact Edition.
Do you get paid by the number of products you put in a talk? Is that like...
Oh, absolutely. And I talked about SharePoint. I talked about
MapPoint. BizTalk in there.
MapPoint 2011. And then Rob Connery is over there actually editing a Vista Developer's Life episode that we are working on. And we released a Hanselman Minutes podcast with Phil Hack earlier. And I got lots and lots of stuff going on right now. And then actually Phil and I are practicing right now on a background thread, a talk we're going to give tomorrow on NuGet.
And what is the name of the talk for people that want to see it?
NuGet.
NuGet is the name of the talk. You are correct, sir.
I'm not sure what the name of the talk is.
You really don't know the name of your own talk.
Phil, what is the name of our talk?
This is so awkward.
But it's the 11:30 talk. We're up against each other.
I think it's...
Oh, really? Are you?
10:30.
I am 11... I think
Let me
11,
check my Windows 7
I
series.
I would never allow myself
series.
To be up against
Let me check
one
my
of you.
iPhone with my C-sharp power mix up.
My Windows phone. I'm already figured it out at 10:30.
Oh,
it's too slow.
Looks like you're not running IE9
Sorry.
On that, are you?
You were a little too slow, Miguel.
No, I'm not. I'm actually using a product designed for users.
It begins.
Sorry.
Really?
I apologize.
Too bad
have you found that data yet? I've already figured it out.
Yeah, sorry.
We're taking questions.
CH9 Live in this 30 minutes of randomness.
What was that? What the fuck was that?
Beep,
timer.
And
Jesus.
Hit the timer.
There's always a good situation for why we do
Did
live,
beep
and
that?
This is not it.
Oh my
this
god.
Is,
yeah, what the?
This is a horrible situation to do live.
Don't worry, guys. We do have water, and we will retaliate.
So let's focus technology.
Yes.
Let's bring it back in.
How about those Cubs? I'm gonna do a spit take. Go ahead. Again. Let me do a spit take.
So what's your take, for example, on open source with Microsoft? Like a great example is NuGet. Like I see so many people NuGetifying their projects. For like, I'm using that as a verb these days.
Okay.
But just over lunch, Phil was showing me like huge statistics where, in some sense, it's making it more productive for somebody to use an open source library, or making it easier for them to even discover that something exists. Like, hey, I really don't need to write my own exception handling framework. I'll just reuse one. It makes .NET look like open source is blossoming.
I think it makes .NET look like we're catching up with open source. Let's be frank. Linux has had apt-get, and Java has Maven, and Rails has
Ruby gems. Yeah.
A package manager was a long time coming. Yeah. I think we're doing it the right way, though. Not that they're not. I'm not saying
we are doing it right in the sense that it's open source, the community is committing to it, we're including Modernizer. I mean, we're turning this ship around slowly. And I think if we weren't, you probably wouldn't keep coming to this, would you?
Right. So, I mean, certainly.
But what are your thoughts on something like NuGet? So, like, is it, hey, well, NuGet, you all should have done it a while ago? Or, because it seems like I'm finding out about so many more open source projects that I really did not know existed.
Well,
and more people feel almost like the man.
Let the man, yes.
So, I guess what I...
I certainly think that that NuGet, it's a good... What is going on here?
Oh, God. Is this part of...
No, certainly I think that NuGet is a good thing. And in general...
We're not keeping this PG-13.
And in general, right? I think that Scott Goose... And I told you that last year. I think that Scott Goose's team in general, and I think it's because Scott Goose is a web guy, they understand the need for diversity and heterogeneous systems and the fact that we're all in this together. You know, we're all using the same web regardless of, you know, what platform we're using. So there's definitely, I think that the dev is probably the most educated team at Microsoft when it comes to open source. In the last couple of years, they've open sourced a tremendous amount of stuff. Meth came out, MVC3 came out, open source. The F-Share compiler came out, the Iron Languages came out, the DLR came out.
Micro framework
came out.
jQuery contributions, which I think is another
thing.
Well, it's more than just us putting open source out there, but the real thing I think is interesting is when someone at Microsoft says, we need a product. Oh, it already exists.
Right.
Let's use that. That is
success. Happening? Is that taking place?
We didn't rewrite Modernizer. We didn't rewrite jQuery.
I actually asked Scott Goo about, you know, what was the process of getting Modernizer actually accepted, if you will.
I think it was like 8 days or something.
Yeah. He said it was, you know, from LCA to, which is actually very surprising to me.
But is that happening? Yes, it is.
Okay.
The problem is, at any big company, that you get people who are really, really hyper-focused, mm-hmm. and you say, oh, yeah, I'm building a new foo. And all they do is think about foo. And they don't think about foo's competition.
Yeah.
And they look at foo's competition as competition,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to saying, oh, well, someone already wrote foo. It's awesome, and it has 80% market share, and it's all open source, and it's love. Maybe I should not write foo at all.
Yeah.
And all that energy that I'm putting into making something new, I should use something that already exists.
Right.
But I think that's kind of a truism for all developers, too, is that they'd rather reinvent the wheel and say, oh, my version's going to be better because it has annotations.
Not invented here is a big problem everywhere.
Yeah.
But I don't think everyone gets it, but we're getting there slow.
Yeah.
I think a good point is that, like, Entity Framework, Code First, and SQL Compact, most people are getting those from NuGet. So just the fact that we're getting those people to release their product as a NuGet package shows culture change at Microsoft. Now it would be cool if they released like that as open source and then put it in NuGet. And we're getting there, slowly but surely.
Yeah, so Entity Framework in particular, as a gracious manatee, is difficult to replicate.
You can't say that with a straight face. That just kills me every time.
Well, you know, I had a different name
unicorn.
Initially.
I had Magic Unicorn. No, we don't need to know.
I think
a PG-13 show. I'm sure Scott and I are fired anyways, so this is our last appearance.
No.
I think
everybody can relate to manatee, especially after using Entity Framework.
It's what's for dinner.
I'm sorry, I should use more inline SQL.
So.
Actually, now that you mention it,
well,
I'm not an inline SQL guy.
Get back to inline SQL?
No, I think that this is an important discussion because for years, developers like to build these big architectural astronautic engines. And, you know, Joel Spolsky wrote about this. Everybody likes to build these big visions. And in the end, you end up using 10% of it. And Rob Connery, which is right there in the audience, actually came up, you know, he's a SQL guy. He understands SQL. He loves SQL. And you end up in a situation with the gracious manatee or other ORMs where you invent DSLs, like linked to SQL. You know, the main specific languages for accessing SQL. And Rob has a really good point, which is, well, SQL is already such the main specific language. Why are you not using that domain specific language to pull your data out?
Why did we spend 10 years going from, you know, like ASP Classic and PHP and all that kind of stuff to these big Java open source ORM thing? And now we're right back where we are.
With Matrix.
We're right back there.
I think it's ASP. Well,
and
I think it's
Select Star from episodes.
It's a little bit of a disease, I think, in that at some point a bunch of books on, you know, on software engineering, software architecture, design patterns people said, oh, we have 20 design patterns. We need to use every single one of them in our product.
I think that was true. It became very trendy for Java developers to...
And .NET developers.
Over-engineer. And I think by example, we tended to follow.
Right.
I remember the classic examples in 2001 where what was the bookstore example? Pet store. If you all remember, where there was a very over-engineered Java application. And then the .NET pet store was just... stored procedures passing in query parameters. And we ended up running, I think it was like 28 times faster, 6 times a load, stuff.
We had an interesting argument with a guy who wanted to know if stored procedures were okay to be used. And we said, me and Rob were like, no, they're done. You don't need to do stored procedures anymore. That's a solved problem. Mm-hmm. Don't use stored procedures. People use stored procedures for performance reasons, and there's no reason to do that anymore.
I think there will always be a debate on whether to use that or not.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you have a professional DBA, go build your stored procedure that you don't have to maintain, and then you go and build your code that just uses the stored procedure. Anyways, I'm a sloppy database programmer. You know,
somebody
like
else makes the database.
DBAs do like it because they can restrict. It's like this is the only thing you can do, and I know exactly what.
No,
you're
but
doing.
They're professionals. They're professionals.
But they're locking developers out by doing that.
Maybe,
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's a design choice.
But let me go back to Rob Connery's product because I think it's brilliant. And what Rob Connery did is he did a really nice wrapper. Yeah, that's Rob Connery. He did a really nice wrapper where you pass SQL strings like the God intended them to be in a safe, secure fashion, and you get your parameters back using C# dynamic in a nice and safe way. And it's a 400 lines of code. It's tiny. Everybody can use it, and you don't need to bring in manatees of the size of Entity Framework or other ORMs like an Hibernator. I'm not singling out EF. I mean, there's a lot.
What are you saying? Are you saying that if EF is a gracious manatee, then an Hibernate is a very kind sea cow?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Kind sea cow. Yes.
Would you have the arguments against an Hibernate as well, or is it really an Entity Framework thing?
So the question, I think it's a little bit of both have those properties of being very big system for big solutions and. It works great for small demos, but as soon as you start dealing with real data and very large data sets, you need to go and buy your book on Entity Framework to figure out how the thing works inside. And you might as well just learn SQL from the get-go instead of using this thing.
So we are back to where we were 10 years ago.
So I think there are advantages with Hibernate, for example, having a second-level cache, for example. It's one of the things we use in channel 9.
Second-level caching can be layered on top of Massive or Dapper or whatever. That's not the point.
But if I'm sending SQL strings, I need to manage all the actual scaling of my database. The point is so much of common websites are just read operations.
But, you know,
it's a very small percent.
What ORM you use has nothing to do with what first or second level cache that you use.
Well, the point is if you're writing straight to SQL, that's an issue.
Why?
For scaling out your application. Because you can't throw
Stack Overflow.
Dan, I don't want to, I think we should stop this thing because as soon as you made that statement, I just saw Rob Connery go. And when Rob Connery makes that face,
blog post is coming.
All right. Well, Rob needs to show us how, the way I think of it is a classic example of, say, a Twitter or Facebook. Would a Twitter or Facebook just do direct writing?
Aren't they?
No, they're not.
Sorry.
I think that's the point, right? It's because so much of the data is read-heavy.
How do you know that they aren't?
You can go to, what is it, highscalability.org what they do.
I think there's a semantic disconnect here. Are they writing direct SQL? Are they writing inline SQL? I'm sure they probably are. Do they have a second-level cache between them and the database? Yes, they probably do.
Yeah, they have main cache.
They have inline SQL.
Right. Well, I guess my point is it's not as easy to – you're not just writing a SQL statement.
Well, but here's the problem.
Whole point, here's the problem.
When you say I'm going to build scalable software, most people don't even know where the problems of scalability are going to come in.
Or do they even need to?
Well, that's a classic architecture astronaut point. Though.
Right, exactly.
Over-engineering
from the get-go.
I totally agree.
So my position is write something, and once you find out what the problem is, you can do two things. You can refactor the code.
Yes.
It's not like it's magic. You know how to refactor. So you write a simple version, then you refactor it. And there's this guy on Twitter, very interesting guy, Demis Bellot. you know, he's a big fan of .NET, but he doesn't like some of the directions in which people or the community has gone on these architectural issues. And he's kind of going to a simpler, gentler .NET world. And the way that he pitches it is .NET with a very basic, you know, it's all built on top of ASP.NET, so it's just a very basic layer of ASP.NET. He exposes his data as JSON, and he tends to build websites in a very curious way. He uses one HTML page, very basic, with a jQuery UI, and the UI is all dynamically generated from JSON requests from the server.
Right, by templating.
All templating. So yeah, it's
Gmail.
What is nice about this thing is that it reminds me of the way that the original people at AT&T used to write books or samples. I don't know if you remember the C or C++ books, the Unix books. There were thin
How
books.
How old are you? Jeez.
I'm 37 years old.
Wow,
so there were thin books.
He's so young looking.
Yeah, but there were thin books where you could learn the technology. There were books like this. You could read them in a week and you would learn the language. And this goes a little bit back to that age where it's very simple to learn a technology. And I like his approach. And his approach, it's all very simple. There's not a lot of over-engineering. And when you need to scale,
right,
you know, you'll figure out what you need to do.
So in that model, because that's an actually really interesting point where with so much that's going on with HTML5 and JSON, is do you really need server-side processing? In other words, if I can just use JSON as the only thing, I can make my backend whatever I want. I just have a JSON interface, and everything is HTML to the side. Are we killing server side?
Of course.
No, you're not.
Well, you're not killing server side.
Well, server side languages like
ASP.NET. But you've got a quad i7 that's sitting around that's doing nothing but 3D videos and SVG anime chicks. Make that do some work.
Sure.
So bring the data set over because you've got a quad on the server and a quad on the client.
Yeah.
Quad on the client ain't doing anything.
Yeah.
Bring that stuff over. I mean, to this this guy's point, I forget his name, but if
Demis.
So you could write a small MVC app or a small Sinatra app or Nancy, and you just serialize some JSON and do some work with templates on the client side. Totally cool.
Right.
So that's why I like WebMatrix so much.
Right. So a little bit of the point.
I think you wouldn't even need WebMatrix anymore.
It's not the
if
point.
You can do no, but I could
no,
see
no, no.
A very well trend of HTML and just JavaScript.
Well, it's HTML, but you need a little bit on the server
and
side
services
to generate some of the stuff. So certainly WebMatrix or
non-user interface on the server side. Just my services, whatever cool term you want to use,
it's
that
a
you
little
wrap
bit,
in JSON.
It's a little bit more fine. You can go down that path. The one thing that I wanted to call out is Demis has been, and I'm going back to your original point, which is Demis has been writing about how to scale .NET servers.
Sure.
And the problem is you don't know where the problems are going to be. So this guy is saying, well, sometimes you're going to end up using Redis, and Redis is a great store that you can use. It's a NoSQL data store that you can use for caching. You can use Memcache. You can use. So he has a combination of things of how to scale .NET web service. He built this British audio site. Can't remember what it's called, but it's a production site, millions of users, and he used all of these techniques. And the idea is he didn't know where he was going to start, but he definitely used very thin components, and each component is very easy to understand. You don't need to understand very big architectures to build these things. I think it gives him a lot of flexibility. And in general, his document on scaling .NET, I think, is there's really nothing out there from Microsoft that says, how do you scale .NET? Other than, you know, go use Entity Framework and pray to the gods that this works.
Well,
yeah,
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think there are folks trying to do that. And then there's the Azure part, which I actually don't want to get into. But, you guys are programming language. I don't want to say wonks, but you love programming languages. You have a certain sense. What's your take on, I see JavaScript just blowing up everywhere, and even server-side JavaScript. Kind of where do you all see JavaScript? What's your personal opinion of JavaScript, and where do you see it going? And is server-side JavaScript the next fad or the next big thing?
When you are at the advanced age that Miguel and I are at, January 74? Are we the same age?
November 72.
November 72.
So I'm older. I'm wiser.
You're wiser.
I'm wiser.
You're about a year.
Two years of extra wisdom.
How old am I? 37, 38? You're 37?
I'm 30.
Can we get a cane up here?
I'm going to be 38.
You're going to be 38.
I'm going to be 39.
I'm 37.
I'm 38.
Okay.
Wait. When
Miguel and I were using...
We didn't have no internet.
The point is that we lived through the boom, and I scaled stuff in ISAPI, I scaled stuff in C++, I scaled stuff in freaking Turbo Pascal.
Oh, really?
It doesn't... The language... When you're an old man with a beard, or an old man who can't grow a beard, then you...
Or shaves.
you...
Or shades.
You see?
I think I may need to figure this myself.
You see that the languages come and go, and there's excursions off to make big object-oriented systems and we come away, and there's excursions off to go and do soap, and then we change the angle brackets to curly braces. It's just, it's all the same stuff, right? We're all going to end up writing Lisp in the end. It's just that the young people, the 20-year-olds and the 22-year-olds that are out there building this stuff, I think that they forget that we're in this cyclical process. It's expand and then grow and expand and then grow. So I think that we're just in a point of contraction right now. Things are going to get simpler. But as far as what language you pick, it doesn't matter. It's all It's all syntactic sugar over the same computer science concepts.
So, like, because I want to try and nail you down to get
nail
your...
Nail me, Dan.
Exactly.
That's my ringtone now.
I'm going to...
JavaScript. All right. I'm going to ask, you know, you're going to sign up for a project. Hey, do you mind doing it in JavaScript? Are you going
to
say, okay, that's fine, or would you do it with JavaScript with me?
If someone says, I'm going to build something and I'm going to do it in language foo, totally. It doesn't matter.
So for example, like, would you consider using something like a Nikhil Katharia, if you know, has ScriptSharp? Would you say, I need to build a JavaScript app. I love myself some C#. I'm going to start with ScriptSharp.
I know.
Or would you write the JavaScript?
I would write the JavaScript. I would pick the lightest weight possible thing that would work, and you're not going to need it. You know, just Yagni through the entire thing. And when I need it, I'll need it. But the thing is,
I appreciate the straight answer.
This doesn't mean be sloppy. It doesn't mean use agile processes and call it, you know, and use it as an excuse for being sloppy. It means do the simplest possible thing that'll work. And then cycle as fast as you can. Fail early.
But I think that there's also room for things like ScriptSharp or CoffeeScript, which are
CoffeeScript. But ScriptSharp and CoffeeScript are different. ScriptSharp is taking a language you know and turning it into a language you don't know. While CoffeeScript is taking a language you know and then removing the noise.
Right, but there's still a room for if you have a bunch of code that you've written before and you want to reuse it on the client. I think that there's value there.
Sure.
So, you know.
So same question to you. Like, you know, you get hired on to do the project. You can do it whichever way. Would you do the ScriptSharp or some of these other things or JavaScript?
It depends. If I have code that I wanted to reuse, I would definitely use ScriptSharp. First of all, I wouldn't use it today because it's not open source. Now, if that changes, I might rethink my answer. Now, that being said, you know, if the job calls for JavaScript, I'll write JavaScript. Now, I'm a poor JavaScript programmer. So it might not be the best choice. I think that a 15-year-old probably could do a better job than I could do.
I think we have one here, actually. Where's Sean Sheehan?
Well, you know, somebody that knows how to do the prototypes and know all the shortcuts to hack the prototype chain, and you know, he would probably be better than an old man that...
Who shaves.
Who shaves.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. These are... These are good answers. So speaking, same thing on the server side. So now we have how many flavors? We have Web Matrix, very simple to your point, like just the minimal. We have ASP.NET MVC, which is, you know, everyone, agile programmers.
A little bit more formality.
Yeah, exactly. Then we have old school Windows forms, ASP.NET style programming, button click event, and those sort of things.
I wouldn't say it's old school. It's just
traditional.
These are increasing layers of abstraction. I mean, all of this is deciding at what level do you want to play.
Yeah.
So that's all it is.
So that's what I'm asking you. Is it totally dependent, or do you have a favorite? So, for example, like is it totally situational, or would you say, you know what, I don't really like using blah.
No, dude.
I just
so it is.
I'm going to try and use Web Matrix until I don't have to.
Let me answer the question. It is totally situational. If you have a nail, you use a hammer. If you have a screw, you use Entity Framework. No. Pick the tool. If you just walk around with a hammer, you're just like, yeah, man, Node.js will solve the world's problems. That's the wrong answer.
It will solve a lot of those problems.
It will solve a lot of problems, but it won't solve all of them. I have gone...
Israel-Palestine, I have a question.
I have got... It could. The angry birds could get together. Yes.
You never know.
Pick the tool for the job. I mean, seriously. We did the front end in Web Matrix because it was light and fun and we enjoyed ourselves. So what? I have done file new project on web forms applications and for some charity work I did on the side because it was the easiest thing that I needed to do at the time and I don't feel bad about it. Pick the layer of abstraction that the project needs and do the simplest possible thing.
So why, in the really easy example for the volunteer website, why not WebMatrix? Or was it before
so
WebMatrix
this was
time?
So this was a charity that needed a list of a bunch of, you know, a grid of data, and then a generated map. And it was like file new, dynamic data project, two tables, hit OK. I added one image handler. There was an HTTP handler, and I was done. That was it.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
There's probably a half dozen ways to have done it.
Yeah.
That was the way I did it. And I deployed it, and it was cool. And I wasn't getting paid for it.
Yeah, it's like what they said. If you give two programmers a problem, you come with two very different solutions.
Yeah.
You get 50 programmers a problem, they'll come up with 50 different solutions.
They'll come up with regular expressions.
Yeah.
So what about yourself, Miguel? Like, you know,
yes.
What's your take on the world? We have the WebMatrix, MVC, ASP.NET. Is it you know, wholly situational, or do you see, you know...
Yeah, I don't disagree at all.
X, no. You know,
use what works for you.
And in terms of Mono support, does Mono support all three of those? Or what's the WebMatrix story? Because I honestly don't know.
Well, so the problem is WebMatrix has three libraries that are not open source. Razor, Microsoft.infrastructure.something, and something else. So we can run the binaries that Microsoft has released. So we're able to run Orchard. We have to take Microsoft assemblies and put them in thing, and we don't have the source, and people can make changes. It's not open source, and we cannot redistribute it. But people can run Orchard, they can run WebMatrix, they can run ASP.NET MVC3, they can run WebForms.
Cool.
Now, is that WebForms, I guess we're at ASP.NET 4?
Yeah.
Or is there any restrictions?
Web 4, no. 4.
Okay.
So they can use whatever those, all of those. There are, like I said, there in my radar, we have two other options. One is service stack that I already discussed from Mr. Demis below, and the other one is called Manos. From Jackson, one of my...
Like hands?
Manos, my hand.
In Spanish?
Yeah.
Okay.
Manos de Mono, it's called. And Manos is, think of Node.js,
is
but
Jackson
for C
Harper?
Sharp. Jackson Harper, yeah.
Right, cool.
So it's like Node.js. And the idea is that instead of building servers for request response, which is what ASP.NET does, it's you run the page, you're done, you're over. Manos and Node take a different approach. It's event-based programming. So you can have 10,000 connections open to the server, and it's designed in a way that it can handle 10,000, 50,000 connections and not get bogged down. What is interesting is with Manos and Node, you use one thread per CPU to handle all connections. Because
really?
It all uses event-based I/O. So whenever you want to query the database, you do an asynchronous request. If you want to open a file, you do an asynchronous request. And when the kernel has the data ready, you write a callback that says, okay, now I'll run that piece of code.
Yep.
Because the reality is that the CPU can only run one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So you run one thread per CPU, and it's all based on events.
Yep.
So whenever either the network is ready or your clients are ready, you will dispatch the event.
And assuming you have multi-core and all that stuff, it handles and scales with that as well.
Right. The theory is that the optimal number of threads in any system is one per CPU, so then why not write your system in such a way that the event at I/O will tell you and then everyone will get in line?
Right. So you certainly can start more threads if you have to, but the...
Fail.
Yeah, no,
that's
okay.
Cool, man.
It's a song from Fritz Pop, a Bostonian band that we like very much,
very nice.
And they're featured in the Rock Band game.
Are they open source?
So, unfortunately, we are out of time. This has been an awesome discussion. They are giving us the sign that we have no time. So, Miguel, website
Thank
to plug?
Much.
Website to plug or Twitter account?
Go Mono.
GoMono.com. Miguel de Casas is my Twitter handle.
Okay, and Scott Hanselman?
ThisDeveloperSLife.com.
And Twitter?
Chancelman.
Or Gracious Manatee Lover.
Okay.
It's an alias.
Are you going to make
somebody
that?
Somebody is building that right now.
Are you
going to
make that?
No, it's already done, and it has a link directly to your...
Oh, that's nice.
Thank you. I talked to the Twitter guys
this
morning.
That's very kind of you.
All right, so thank you both. This has been an excellent, great conversation, and thank you, of course, Rob Conner.
Thank you.